We should be speaking shortly with Zafar Bangash. He is the editor-publisher of Crescent International. You can find him easily. Just go Crescent International. But if you really want to go shortcut, it's crescent-online.net. And by the way, it's a great site. And it's been – they've been – all these sites tinker. And so they're getting – it's a very – I find it much more – accessible site, and it's there's a number of fresh material that we're really anxious to talk to Zafar about. A major item is this thing that came up during our discussion with Stephen Gowans. That is the management of Mecca, which is under the control of the royal family, the Sauds. And we've had a tragedy there, but it's not the first one. In recent years, there have been a number of terrible incidents, and thousands of lives have been lost, and raising the question across the Islamic world of who are these guys and why do they have this power? So this is a question we want to know, we want to speak to Zafar about, and this has a further problem of coming at a time when Saudi Arabia is engaging in really dubious activities abroad. It is calling for the violent removal of Assad from Syria. It is bombing Yemen. It is – Saudi Arabia is, everybody knows, the richest country in the Middle East, and it is bombing the poorest country. And Washington doesn't seem to be concerned about that. On top of that, Saudi Arabia has just been selected to be the chair of the Human Rights Commission of the United Nations. And strangely enough, the Americans don't mind. they do not mind. That's this kind of macabre humor is apparently big at the White House. I suppose they must – the kind of jokes they must tell each other would curl your hair because they're so exposed. Saudi Arabia cuts off the head of somebody practically every other day. Sometimes they take the beheaded figure and crucify it, which they, according to their law, I mean, that's law. You want to go by the book. You have to cut off his head and then crucify him. Not that they invented it because it was done in England. It was done right here in Canada. Hanging, drawing, and quartering went on. So it could be they got the idea from us. I don't know. But they're doing it. We are joined now, I believe, by Zafar Bangash. Are you there, sir?
Hello, Phil. Yes, I am.
It's great to be talking to you. I was just saying your site. You've done a lot of work. That is crescent-online.net.
That is
very attractive. And it's you have a number of recent and, I would say, up-to-the-minute articles, so I congratulate you. I hope people go to that site.
Well, thank you. We've been actually following this story on what happened in Mecca at Hajj.
Yes.
And we've been in touch with a number of pilgrims that were there, and we were getting reports virtually sort of, you know, every, I wouldn't say every minute of the day, but definitely 2-3 times a day. So we can safely say that our coverage has been very, very extensive and very detailed, and a lot of information has been provided, yes.
Well, Ed, it's very essential because Saudi Arabia seems to have an escort of kind of destroyers, Canada, the United States, Britain, always helping muddy the waters or confuse people about what occurred. I'm not seeing these figures, but the figures I see at Crescent, and you're quoting individuals from Pakistan,
yes,
the Islamic Republic, and other authorities on the and Africans who have,
yes,
lost pilgrims.
Yes, yes.
And
the figures
are very high.
Of course, the figures that we have quoted.
Why doesn't Saudi Arabia even know, or why don't they admit they don't know?
We see that the problem with Saudi Arabia is that they are very scared to admit these very, very high figures because that would immediately expose them to a lot of charges of negligence and incompetence. Although the figures that they have admitted publicly, and those are the figures that are being quoted extensively by the BBC, CNN, and others, of 669 pilgrims dead and 934 injured, although quoting Pakistani and Indian diplomats, like their foreign office officials, who have said that we have been handed lists that contain the names and photographs of 1,100 people. So that means that these are lists that were provided by the Saudi regime, and yet the Saudi regime officially continues to talk about 769 pilgrims dead. Then we obtained a copy of a letter that was issued by the Saudi Deputy Health Minister, Hamad bin Mohammed Al-Duwaili, and we quoted him. This was a letter that was initially put on the website for a while, and then it was withdrawn, but we were able to retrieve it. And in that, he has admitted to 4,173 deaths. And this is also corroborated by the fact that other reports have emerged that there are 22 containers full of bodies in Mecca. Those bodies have not been identified. And one of the most outrageous things that the Saudis have done is that, you know, when they picked up the bodies, of course, most people, most pilgrims, or all pilgrims are supposed to have a name tag with their sort of, you know, where they are staying, etc.
Yes.
This is for identification purposes. But in that sort of, you know, chaos that erupted, obviously people lost a lot of these personal things, and these name tags are hanging around their necks. So they probably got ripped off or thrown off, because people lost their other belongings. And there are literally thousands of bodies that are unidentified. And Egyptian pilgrims have told us, Libyan pilgrims have told us, that when they go to the authorities, to the hospital or other authorities, and there they cannot find their loved ones that are missing, they are simply told to go to the morgue and find out there. Now, in the morgue, these bodies that are lying over there have not been tagged. Now, can you imagine the horror that family members have to face, that they have to go through thousands of bodies, looking at thousands of bodies, pulling them out of these freezers to identify whether it's their loved one or not? I mean, this is a horrifying sort of, you know, experience to put anybody through.
And by the way, I mean, once you do have trauma of that type, you could be mistaken.
Yes, absolutely.
Because you don't really want it to be your loved one. You're hoping it's not.
Exactly. Even yesterday, when 104 bodies of Iranian pilgrims were brought back to Tehran, and this was after a lot of delays. In fact, the Iranian government has said that they have lost 464 pilgrims, and that's the highest number of any group. And there are still several hundred Iranian pilgrims that are still missing. Among them, a number of Iranian diplomats that have not been accounted for. And the Saudis have absolutely no idea, no clue as to what has happened to these people. And they're not even providing any information.
But which raises, by the way, there's a criminal issue, some have said, and it's right to ask, could it actually have been a kidnapping?
Exactly. This has been suggested, although Iran has been very careful not to press this issue publicly. But the former foreign minister of Iran, Dr. Ali Akbar Velayati, actually did issue a statement in which he said that the deaths in Mecca are highly suspicious, and we really need to know what has taken place. That's why it is of the utmost importance that there should be an international fact-finding mission in which diplomats, of course, from Muslim countries, because non-Muslims are not permitted into Mecca, but he said that if, let's say, the UN were to appoint some Muslim diplomats from the UN to be part of this mission to investigate, then, you know, that is something that is urgently required. But I was talking about the Iranian, you know, bodies that were sent, 104 of them, and Iran has officially stated that the names that were put on their caskets, and when they examined the bodies, they were not the bodies of the individuals that they had named. So they said, now we have to carry out DNA tests to identify who these pilgrims were or whose bodies are the ones that have been sent to us. So there is a lot of incompetence that the Saudis have indulged in. And in fact, I am absolutely convinced that this was as a result of their criminal negligence. They're simply incapable of managing crowds. And additionally, a number of pilgrims told us that, you see, where they go for the stoning rites, it's a one-way traffic that they come. So they come from one side and they have to go from the other side. Mm-hmm. And yet the Saudis had blocked off the exit points. Yes. Now, so far they have not explained why they blocked off the exit points. But the pilgrims have told us that there was this Saudi deputy crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, whose convoy was passing nearby. So the Saudis, immediately what they do is they just block off all points so that this his so-called royal highness can pass through. Yes. And these blighters don't travel in a single convoy of a few cars. They travel with massive security details. So there were 350 security personnel with him. So you can imagine the huge convoy that there was, which meant that the exit point from the stoning site was blocked for several hours. Now, considering that the temperatures at that time were something like 46 to 50 degrees centigrade, people were boiling in that heat. There was no water available to them. Many people fainted. And the others, of course, in desperation, they started to go back in the direction from which they had come. So now imagine there are millions of people coming towards you and there are hundreds of thousands going back in the same direction. Mm-hmm. That's a recipe for disaster. And that's exactly what happened. And mm-hmm. this has been happening year after year after year.
Yeah. By the way, wasn't there a prince who was involved in a previous incident?
Absolutely.
I've heard descriptions. They say it's known to happen that when a royal goes somewhere, everybody has to get out of the way, and they're very aggressive about it.
Exactly.
They push people, which, and once you start up pushing, then it's anything can happen.
That's correct.
A lot of people don't really like being pushed.
Exactly. And that is what had happened in 1990 when pilgrims were coming through the tunnel from Mina, where the tent city is. They were coming towards Mecca. Now, a prince was passing by, so they immediately again block off the exit point. Now imagine hundreds of thousands of people coming through the tunnel and they block off the exit point and people at the back don't know that the exit has been blocked. So they keep pushing.
Yes. Now, and which is how people get killed at soccer matches.
Exactly. So 1,426 pilgrims died inside that tunnel, most of them choked to death as a consequence of this bloody prince. I don't know whosoever that prince was in 1990 passing by over there. I mean, I can narrate to you my personal experience in 1987 when I went for Hajj. My mother was with me. We were coming back from Mecca again to the tent city in the late afternoon after having offered our afternoon prayers in Mecca. And all of a sudden, the road was blocked off by the Saudi security forces. Nobody knew why they blocked off the road, but literally there were, in about a matter of, 10-15 minutes, there were hundreds of vehicles lined up over there on that road. Now, it was extremely hot. This was August of 1987. I mean, even now it is very hot over there, but August is, summer month, extremely hot in Saudi Arabia. We are stuck in this vehicle, and our vehicles and all the vehicles were blocked for about 2 hours. And, of course, the drivers then turned off their vehicles because they can't leave them on for 2 hours. So they turned them off, so the air conditioning was turned off. And people were literally boiling inside those vehicles. And later on, once the road was open, then we discovered that at that time, it was the Saudi King Fahad who was traveling on a road which was about 2 miles away from where our vehicles were going. And yet they blocked off our road so that, that blighter king could pass through on that road 2 miles away. I mean, these are the kinds of idiotic things that they do. They just simply do not care about the well-being of pilgrims or ordinary people, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, you have a very important article saying that deaths are due to Saudi incompetence. And then you also have a second article where you deal with the matter of how the misperception that it's theirs –
Exactly.
You say they're unfit, etc., but also there's a total misunderstanding that about Mecca belonging somehow to this ruling family, these royals.
Exactly. They don't even belong to that region. You know, a lot of unfortunately, a lot of Muslims also don't know this. The House of Saud actually are from an area called Najd. Now, Najd is in Central Arabia. And Mecca and Medina are located in an area called the Hejaz. Now, historically, the Hejaz was always administered by people from that area, from Mecca or Medina, whereas the Saudis are outsiders to Mecca and Medina. And in fact, to this day, the people of Mecca and Medina do not like the Saudis because, you know, there are several problems with this land. Called Saudi Arabia. The Prophet had named this the Arabian Peninsula, and Muslims are very, very particular about adhering to the Prophet's instructions. So for a family to rise up and declare that whole land as Saudi Arabia, which means that the Saudi family somehow owns this land, it is a grave sin in Islam for any individual or a family to name an entire land after themselves. Because, of course, Muslims believe that everything belongs to God Almighty, and that we cannot lay claim to its ownership. We are only custodians of that. Whereas this, family and even people in Saudi Arabia today question this family when they say that, well, look, the total population of Saudi Arabia is 28 million, and this family comprises, even after multiple wives and everything, about 7,000 princes. So how can 7,000 people lay claim to a land that has a total population of 28 million people? Mm-hmm. You know, there are a number of issues that are very, very problematic, very troublesome with respect to what the Saudis are doing over there.
Isn't there some way, and of course, well, you've outlined some. You say, of course, there should be a proper investigation. And also, if criminal behavior happened, that something should be done about it. But this business of them also exercising control over who comes and goes. I saw an interview with the President Assad. He mentioned that the Syrians have been prevented for 4 years from attending Hajj.
Correct. Not only Syrians, this year even the Yemenis were prevented from going for Hajj. And again, this is totally contrary to the Quranic command, because in the Quran, it is clearly stated that God says to the people that have the ability to perform Hajj that they should come and perform Hajj and they should be allowed to do so. And even this introduction of visa, etc., for performing Hajj is totally contrary to the teachings of Islam, because this place, the Kaaba and Mecca and Medina, these are sacred cities, and God has said that any person, any Muslim that wishes to come and perform his pilgrimage rites, because this is one of the requirements in Islam, that they should be allowed to do so. Mm-hmm. So when the Saudis introduced this visa requirements, that in itself is a violation of the Quranic command. And then they aggravate this situation by denying certain people the visa, you mentioned.
By the way, don't they negate then their right to be in power? They are so arrogant as to say that the president of Syria, because the Saudi royal family doesn't like him, he has to step down. Now, you have a material legal case against them.
Absolutely.
How are they permitted to go on? You would think that someone would initiate, certainly in the Islamic community, a move to say, you guys have to go away.
Exactly.
It's not your business.
In fact, there is a movement underway already as a consequence of this latest outrage, because this is not the first time it has been occurring virtually year after year, that there are a lot of very, very powerful voices that are demanding that the administration of Hajj should be taken away from the Saudis, number one, and that there should be a body of competent Islamic scholars backed by professionals that know crowd management, etc., that they should assist them. Mm-hmm. And they've also said, in fact, the Islamic Republic of Iran has said that we are going to take legal action against the Saudis for mass murder, for crimes against humanity. And I hope that they undertake this thing, because it is extremely important that these people be held accountable for the horrors that they visit upon these pilgrims that are supposed to be guests of God, and yet they become victims of Saudi negligence and criminal responsibility.
Yeah. You don't want the case, of course, to go to the UN Human Rights Commission, because the chairman is Saudi Arabia.
Of course, not there. I think I think that, in fact, this matter probably would have to be adjudicated by some Islamically established legal court, so that
entity Islamic, with some integrity.
Exactly, that Islamic law should be applied, mm-hmm. and this can only be done if there are competent judges in Islamic law who will implement the Islamic rule. And in fact, based on that, not only would the administration of Hajj be taken away from the Saudis, but that they would be punished for the crimes that they have committed.
Maybe put an end to royalism, which seems to be a contradiction with Islam.
Exactly. Absolutely. There is absolutely no concept or validity of any royalty in Islam. This is an innovation, a very bad innovation in Islam, and that also is something that goes against the House of Saud.
I'm really glad we underlined. Now, you know, it's very important. I must ask you, because we've had dramatic development in Syria. You've written an article titled, "As Russia Bombs ISIS, U.S. Complains Its Terrorists Are Being Attacked."
For years, the U.S. had been saying this, it's only treating moderates, and now it's complaining to the Russians as to why they're bombing these people over there, you see. So the Americans have been caught in their own contradiction in Syria.
Yeah, now, and some surprising developments. And one of them is today's headline, the New York Times says that the Kurds are, the U.S. suddenly is very interested in the Kurdish region and wants to fight ISIS there. Also, I see reports in Press TV, for example. The Kurds say they're very pleased that the Russian planes are there.
Yes, exactly. In fact, there have been a number of—
Who's going to win out there?
Yes. So you see, the Americans are now trying to come from behind the scenes once again, now that they have been exposed, that they've been training these terrorists in Syria. Now they want to use another excuse, and unfortunately— they're able to mislead their own people, because the kind of information that is being fed to the American people, they would not be able to know exactly what's really going on. But I think the Russians have really called the Americans bluff and exposed them for the terrible, terrible policies that they're pursuing in Syria. So I'm glad that the Russians have stepped in. I mean, they've already bombed about 60, 70 of these terrorist sites. Yesterday, one of the Russian generals said that about 600 of these terrorists have now fled from Syria, and they're heading towards Europe. So I think these are other developments that are worth pursuing.
And one last comment, if I could. The game, which you can read in the New York Times, about making it Sunni versus Shia, I don't see that at all based on the reaction from the Arab world at this point.
No, of course, it has nothing to do with the Shia versus Sunni. That is something that the Americans, the CIA, the Saudis are very, very keen to promote. But I think the at least within the Muslim world, the vast majority of Muslims have already seen through this game, and they're no longer fooled by this such kind of vile propaganda that is being beamed across.
Wow, colonialism isn't as efficient as it used to be. Zafar Bengash, great articles. It's Crescent International. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Phil. It's my pleasure. Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that was Zafar Bengash for Phil Conlon and company. And I'm Phil Taylor. We'll see you next week. Sur les uns, sur les deux.